like to thank TechServe for sponsoring my show tonight. Hello, and welcome to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live tonight from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm Erica Wides, your host. I'm a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in Manhattan. And I'm very happy to be back in Brooklyn tonight and back on the air. I just spent the last month in Hoi An, Vietnam. And it's nice to be back in New York, especially because the weather is so beautiful. It's sunny and cool and dry. And where I just came back from was extremely hot and humid. So it's really nice to be back here and sitting here in the backyard at Roberta's, looking outside at the herb garden and all the people. So I was in Vietnam for a month working with an organization called Streets International. And Streets is an organization dedicated to helping street kids and orphans in Southeast Asia get a chance at a better life. These are kids who, for various reasons, have wound up in institutions, in orphanages, living on the street, surviving for themselves, really struggling. And Streets gets them off the street, cleans them up, gives them housing. And we give them training to work in the hotel and restaurant industry. So I was there with a colleague of mine, Dr. Neil Burmis, who also teaches with me at ICE in Manhattan, and he's also on the faculty at NYU. And he started the organization called Streets. And out of a love for Vietnam and for Southeast Asia in general, and also out of a desire to finally kind of do something in the restaurant industry that wasn't really about making money and profit and serving fancy food to very well-fed people. It was more about taking those skills that he's developed in all of his years of consulting and restaurant management and doing something good, as he calls it, doing God's work. So Neil invited me to come there for a month and help to open the first center in Vietnam. And I was happy to do that. And so I just got back on Friday. And I brought a little bit of a chest cold back with me, which is why I sound a little bit scratchy tonight. I usually don't sound like this. So in Hoi An, let me explain to you, is a beautiful small town on the coast in Vietnam, South Central Coast. And it's a very, very old town that somehow managed to evade being bombed during the war. And it's remained intact. And it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site. So it's a really beautiful old city on a river. And it had originally been a big merchant kind of town, a shipping town. It's near a big harbor. It's near Da Nang. And Chinese and Japanese merchants came there centuries ago to establish trading to establish trade with other parts of Southeast Asia, and they built these beautiful old shop houses. And many of those are still intact. They've survived. And so Hoi An has been named a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and it's this beautiful, beautiful city on a river. And because it's been designated by UNESCO, it's been very well preserved, and you can't do much to alter the dwellings and alter the buildings. So it's quite a spectacular little town. So Neil chose that town to open the first one of Streets because it attracts so many tourists, so many international tourists. And he thought it would be a good place to start out. It's a small enough city. It was going to be something that would be fairly easy to do, or relatively easy. He plans on opening another one soon in Nha Trang, which is down the coast in Vietnam. And then hopefully we'll be opening another one in Laos within a year, and then maybe one in northern Thailand. So I'm really excited to be a part of it. I'm going to be going back periodically a couple times a year to help out, get things going, and help with the training. So I was there to get the food end of things together. Neil is a front of the house kind of guy, and I was there to kind of help get the kitchen up and running and to write curriculum to help teach the kids. So these kids were chosen. They were interviewed. They were kind of selected out from various social organizations, charities around the country, and most of them live in the region. Like I said, some of them come from orphanages. Some of them were living on the street. Some of them live at home but have very, very poor families. And they'll be in Hoi An with Streets for the next 18 months. So it's a very long, slow progress program. And that's designed intentionally so the kids have a lot of time learning English and learning other life skills and gradually teaching them these skills that they'll need to work in restaurants and hotels. Hoi An, like I said, is a big tourist area. It's also on the coast of Vietnam, and Vietnam has an 1,800-mile coast, and it's rapidly being developed for tourism. So the demand for skilled labor in restaurants and hotels is going to be huge over the next decade or so. And we're hoping that we can get these kids really well trained so they can go out there and get really good jobs and raise themselves up and make their lives much, much better than they ever could have been if they had just stayed at home. So my time with them was fairly limited. I was only there for a month, and they were all brand new to the program, and we were all just getting started together. But it was a really great experience being around them. Their enthusiasm was incredible. They were all just so eager to learn and so excited. And considering the somewhat horrible circumstances the kids came from, they were just incredibly positive, had great energy. And I just loved being around them. It was very refreshing to be around them after teaching students in New York who are sometimes a little bit jaded or a little self-indulgent, or of what I call the self-esteem generation, where you can't really tell them anything they do is wrong because it's all about how they feel about themselves. But these guys were just amazing, and their stories are just incredible. I mean, from, you know, a 16-year-old girl who was living on the street because she had been kicked out. She had been a street beggar. She had been arrested. A 17-year-old girl who had been selling flowers on the street just to support her father, who had been crippled by Agent Orange, an 18-year-old girl who went back and forth between her destitute family and an orphanage, and was working in a really seedy bar and fighting off unwanted male attention. Just really, really hard stuff for 16, 17-year-old kids to have to deal with. So with opening this first center in Hoi An, we're hoping that we can offer a clear path out of despair to a really happy, healthy, and productive kind of life. So that's where I was the last 4 weeks or so in Vietnam. And if you're interested in finding out more about Streets, you can go to their website. It's streetsinternational.org. And you can take a look at some of the work that we're doing and maybe make a little donation, help the kids out. So that's where I was. But of course, I was in Vietnam, and you know, one of the major reasons people go to Vietnam for is the food. It has some really, really incredible food. So when we come back in a little bit, I'm going to really talk about Vietnamese food and what it's about and sort of how it's evolved and what it all is. So we'll be back in a few seconds. This is Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I want to thank TechServe tonight for sponsoring my show. I'm Erica Wides, your host of Why We Cook. So I was just telling you in the previous segment that I just came back from a month in Vietnam. I was working in a city called Hoi An and helping to open a restaurant and training center for disadvantaged kids, street kids, orphans in Vietnam. And the idea is that we're going to give these kids housing, teach them English, teach them life skills, help them kind of pull themselves together. And then they're going to work in the restaurant that we've set up there, learning from the chef, learning hospitality, learning management, learning how to cook, all of these skills that will really help them to kind of move up and out. And these kids are kind of the product of a very kind of crazy, you know, rapid advancement in Vietnam's culture and their social history of the last 35 years. They've come an incredibly long way in the 35 or so years since the end of the war, what we call the Vietnam War and what they call the American War. There's really not much leftover hostility or resentment. The Vietnamese are incredibly wonderful, sweet, polite people and really don't talk about the war. They don't discuss it. They don't think it's really anything worth talking about anymore, which is pretty amazing. So just in that, you know, 3.5-4 decades since the end of the war, they've come a really long way. They're incredibly industrious, and everybody is somewhat of an entrepreneur. The government allows private enterprise. They've been doing that since 1986. So even though it's a communist government, you can still have your own business. And people are very, very entrepreneurial. There are little businesses everywhere. There are tiny little old ladies selling bananas, college students who sell jewelry and food on the beach to pay for their education. And there are restaurants everywhere. There's food everywhere. And the restaurants range from your regular sit-down restaurant to a woman on a corner with a cauldron of soup and a couple of little tiny chairs and tables to everything in between. Food is a huge, huge part of daily life there. And the food is just spectacular and cheap and plentiful and really just vibrant and rich and great. And that's what had originally drawn me to Vietnam years ago. I went there the first time in 98. And I went because I completely fell in love with the food. And it's such a big part of everyone's lives there. And the kids are so incredible because even though they haven't necessarily learned how to cook in classes or institutionally, they all know how to cook because it's just a part of their life and a part of their survival. So they have to cook meals for themselves every night in their group houses, and they just jump right in. They go right to the market and they make their dinners, and it's a really great thing to watch. They would have us over for dinner every once in a while, and they would cook for us, for myself and Neil and some of the other staff. So that was really great. So for some of you listening, I'm sure you've been to Vietnam. It's a very popular travel destination now. It's kind of become very popular in the last decade or so. When I first went in 98, the tourism industry was big but not huge. It was just gearing up, and many of the people traveling were backpackers like myself or more intrepid tourists, mostly Australians and Europeans, not that many Americans. But, you know, like all these so-called developing countries, there's the success stories and then there's everybody else. So although there are all these entrepreneurs, there's still a lot of poverty and people are still struggling. And you see that when you're traveling, that the tourism industry is really developed and there's lots of food and lots of entrepreneurial businesses, but there's still a lot of poor people and a lot of people are suffering, which is why Neil also felt compelled to start Streets to kind of bridge that gap. But it is, like I said, a country of natural-born cooks. And, you know, because people have to fend for themselves, you can't just buy fast food, although, you can buy fast food, but it's certainly not corporate fast food. Everybody knows how to cook. It's not an option. You just know how to do it. But the food is just incredible. And what I want to do in the next segment is get into some of the things that I ate, because we've all eaten Vietnamese food. It's very popular now, but there were some things there that I ate this time that I had never seen before and never eaten before. And I was so taken by the freshness and the vibrancy and the color and just everything, everything that was being served to me, and how cheap it all was. The tourism industry is, like I said, really booming, and the food industry is starting to catch up, and people are starting to open restaurants that are more contemporary and kind of more modern takes on traditional Vietnamese food. But some of them are good, but some of them I found to be a little unimaginative, not that great. And really the best food I find in any country is the street food, the food that's just made by people selling it on the street. So we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, I'm going to talk about some of that because it's one of my favorite subjects is street food. So we'll be right back. Welcome back to to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I want to thank TechServe for sponsoring my show tonight. I'm Erica Wides, the host of Why We Cook, and in the last segment I was filling you in on what I've been doing for the last month, which was working in Vietnam for Streets International, which is an organization that is building restaurants and training centers in Southeast Asia in order to train street kids to work in these industries. And if you're interested in finding out more about them, you can go to streetsinternational.org. So Vietnam is a place that you go for many reasons, of course, to see it, to see the history, to see the sites, to go to the beach. But for me, the first time I went was really for the food. The first time I ate Vietnamese food was in the early 90s. I'm not sure when, probably around 90, 91. I wandered into a place in Chinatown in New York called the Vietnam Restaurant, which I think was probably the first one, the first Vietnamese restaurant. And I don't think it's there anymore. But I went in there and I ate my first meal. I think I had a bowl of pho and some spring rolls. And I was completely in love, just hooked, instantly hooked. What I was just utterly taken with was the what makes Vietnamese food so different from other Southeast Asian cuisines, what makes it different from Thai food, what makes it different from, of course, Chinese, Japanese, Korean food. And that's the use of herbs, fresh, raw herbs, just used with abandon, sprinkled on things, served on the side. The Vietnamese love raw herbs. They grow more than 20 different fresh herbs, and they use them on everything. There's something called a table salad, which is served with almost every dish, which is a pile of fresh green herbs and usually lettuce and some little lime wedges, and you use it to garnish your food. And I just love that. I love that approach. It's like putting all this lightness and green freshness in the food. So the herbs, I think, really set it apart from other Southeast Asian cuisines. And of course, you have to talk about the French when you talk about Vietnam, because the French colonized Vietnam for so long. And so there's a distinct French influence in the food. And you see it in things like coffee. There's a great coffee culture in Vietnam. Little mini stainless steel coffee drip makers that make really dark, strong, rich coffee that's served as is. It can be served with sweetened condensed milk over ice, which is just amazing, like coffee crack in the morning when it's 98 degrees at 7 a.m. There are also amazing baguettes made, and what's so great is that the baguettes are traditional French baguettes, but the Vietnamese have kind of taken them one step further by adding some rice flour to the dough, and the rice flour gives them this extra kind of crispy, ethereal, light quality. And so the baguettes are just amazing. There's a whole school of pâté making, and the pâté is made from pork and pork fat, like any pâté, but then with the addition of things like shallots and lemongrass and white pepper and seasonings that you wouldn't find in traditional French pâté making. So it's a food, if you had to kind of describe it to somebody, you could say it's lighter than Thai, more delicate than Thai, some of the same kind of flavor profiles, lemongrass, shallots, fish sauce, lime juice. But it's somewhat more textural, I think, and the flavors are fresher and sharper and a little bit more focused. Thai food is a little bit more about layering and combining. Vietnamese food, I find, is a little bit more about simplifying and focusing on specific flavors. And, of course, fish sauce, which is probably the most important ingredient, most important condiment in Southeast Asia. And if you listened a few weeks ago to my salt show, we talked a little bit about fish sauce. Fish sauce is really one of the most important ingredients in all Southeast Asian food. Fish sauce in combination with lime juice and sugar and chilies makes up the classic Vietnamese dipping sauce, Nuoc Cham, which gets served with just about everything. And the fish sauce and the herbs together is what really kind of separates it. It's what makes it. And some of those herbs, getting back to the herbs, are things, you know, not just like cilantro, which you would, of course, think of with this kind of food, and mint and different kinds of basils, but Thai basil and a form of shiso or perilla, a little red shiso that's very intense and concentrated. You may have eaten shiso leaf if you've had Japanese food. An herb called rau ram, an herb called saw leaf, which is sometimes called saw leaf coriander. It's a long, narrow leaf with a jagged edge, something called a rice paddy herb, which is a little tiny leaf, almost like a cress, and it's very, very bitter. And food is also garnished with other foods in different forms. So unripe vegetables and unripe fruit are used as a complement. Things like green papaya, which gets shredded. Papaya that's not at all ripened, not sweetened. It's shredded and used as a vegetable. Or tiny little baby green bananas, unripe bananas, which are sliced lengthwise. Very, very thin, shaved into paper-thin slices. And then used as a complement to other dishes to balance out the richness of dishes. So there's a real kind of attention played to this balance of fresh and cooked and raw and green and acid. And I think it's just incredible. I think it's some of the best food in the world. And what strikes me always about it is that this is a cuisine that's so evolved and so developed in a country that's really seen some hard times over the past half century or so, but they've managed to kind of pull it back together and keep their cuisine intact. They went through long periods with very little food, a lot of famine, a lot of difficulty, but the food has just really risen and really shines through. And of course, because it's Asia, we have to talk about rice. And it's a rice-based cuisine, but a funny little quirk about Vietnam is that they eat something called broken rice. And broken rice is rice that in the drying process has broken, probably because it's gotten damp. The rice is laid out on the road, on sides of roads and in fields to dry. And if there's rain, then the rice swells and cracks and then it breaks when it dries. Most Asian cultures consider broken rice unlucky or not fit for consumption, and they export it to Africa because Africa will buy it. But the Vietnamese like the broken rice because it has more flavor. And I absolutely agree with that. The flavor of the rice is more intense. It's nuttier. It has a more kind of, it's ricier flavor. It just tastes better to me. Originally, they would eat the broken rice out of poverty. But then people said, well, this actually tastes really good. So let's keep eating it. So now broken rice is eaten by choice. It's served with certain dishes, not with other dishes. We have a great chef in the restaurant in Hoi An, and he would make these incredible family meals before lunch service. Everybody would sit down for family meal. And on the days he served broken rice, the rice just tasted so much better. And it also clumps up a little bit more, so when you're eating it with chopsticks or with a spoon, it's much easier to eat, and it was just great. And rice is also turned into all sorts of other products, other food products, things like rice noodles. They make very fine rice noodles called bun that are used for noodle dishes, a noodle dish called bún, which is sort of a salad, rice noodles in various shapes and forms to put in soup. The, of course, famous Vietnamese rice paper wrappers, which is a rice flour batter that's steamed into a thin crepe and then dried on bamboo mats and then used to make summer rolls and spring rolls. Ubiquitous in Vietnam, the summer roll, the fresh spring roll, and the fried spring roll, and sticky rice, which gets cooked wrapped in a banana leaf. It's mixed with pork or with lotus seeds, things like that, wrapped in banana leaves, and then steamed for up to 12 hours. So the rice just melds into this kind of glutinous brick, but really, really delicious. So that's just a couple of the things, the herbs, the fish sauce, the rice. I mean, those are the real foundations of Vietnamese cooking. So we're going to just take a short break here again. And when we come back, I'm going to talk about some of the dishes that are native to Hoi An and some of the other classic Vietnamese dishes. And we'll be right back on Why We Cook. Thank you. Welcome back to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in New York. And our show tonight is being sponsored by TechServe. So thank you, TechServe. So I'm just talking about Vietnam and Vietnamese food tonight because I just came back from spending a month there working for Streets International. And I'm just talking about some of the great food that I ate in Vietnam because it's my favorite food, and talking about food is my favorite thing to do. And we don't have that much time left, so what I want to do is just talk about a couple of other dishes that are kind of local to where I was, to Hoi An, to the South Central Coast. One is a dish called cao lao. And cao lao is a noodle dish made from these very thick, very chewy rice noodles. They're about twice as thick as maybe linguine. And they're made from rice flour and water that only comes specifically from a well in Hoi An. And you have to get the water from this one well in order to make these noodles. And if the water's not from that well, it's not Hoi An cao lao. But then the noodles are simmered in a broth, in a sort of a pork broth. And they're put in a bowl with some of that broth. And then they're topped with this great mix, this greens mix from Hoi An that is made up of shredded lettuce and all those different herbs that I talked about before, and fresh morning glory greens, all kinds of herbs. And then they take little squares of pastry dough and fry the pastry dough in pork fat and put that on top. So you get these kind of crunchy, porky, doughy bits on top, like little pastry squares. And then hot chili paste and fish sauce and lime juice get squeezed on top of all of that. So it's really great. And people eat cao lao at all times of the day, but often they eat it for breakfast, and it makes a great breakfast. Also something called ban sao, which is more local to the region, not necessarily Hoi An. And ban sao is a rice flour crepe. So again, the rice gets used in another way. Rice flour gets mixed into a batter with turmeric and a little bit of egg into like a crepe batter, and then fried into a really crispy, chewy, kind of flexible crepe. It's chewier than like a French crepe, not quite like a pancake. And that gets filled with bean sprouts, pork, shrimp, sautéed woodier mushrooms. You put a lot of different things inside of them. The ban sao then gets wrapped in softened rice paper and served with those herbs and greens again. So you get this kind of crispy, chewy, flexible rice crepe filled with all this nice protein and vegetables wrapped in rice paper, and then you get the herbs with it. So you get this really nice combination. And of course, it gets dipped in nuoc cham, the ubiquitous dipping sauce. And the ban sao that we serve in the restaurant at Streets, we garnish with very thinly sliced green bananas too. And the green bananas are really tannic and astringent. And if you try to eat them on their own, they're almost inedible, but when you mix it into this, it's amazing. And then, of course, you can't talk about Vietnam without talking about pho. And pho is the most famous soup of Vietnam. I'm sure many listeners have had bowls of pho. And pho is a beef and pork stock soup that gets served with very thinly sliced raw meat, usually, and rice noodles, and then garnished with lots of herbs and fried shallots and fish sauce and hoisin sauce. And the best pho stock has ginger and cinnamon and star anise in it and onions that have been charred a little bit. And the stock gets really, really fragrant and spicy and really delicious. And pho is eaten in Vietnam at all times of the day, of course, too, but especially for breakfast. And I love the idea of serving soup for breakfast. I think it's a great concept that never really happened here in the U.S. We don't think of soup for breakfast, but a great bowl of pho for breakfast, it refreshes you, it rehydrates you, it's really good. Even when it was 98 degrees at 7 in the morning, people still eat their big bowls of pho. And of course, I could go on about the fruit. I ate amazing fruit, something called dragon fruit, which is this crazy looking pink spiky fruit, mangoes that were just sweet and musky and amazing, durian, the world's stinkiest fruit, which some of you may have had. I could go on, but we are running out of time rapidly. So that's just a little sample of some of the food I ate in Vietnam while I was there working for Streets. So if you're interested in learning more about Streets, you can go online, streetsinternational.org, check out what the organization is doing. And we are just about out of time, so I will see you next week. This is Erica Wides, and this is Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network, coming to you live from Roberta's Pizza. We want to thank TechServe and we'll see you again. Thanks.